702.
Call Refilwe on 011
883 0702.
So as we do every Sunday, we talk conservation with Tim Neary, and today he's bringing us a conversation around the Two Oceans Aquarium in collaboration with the Southern African Foundation for the Conservation of Coastal Birds. They have a program that's focused on the rehabilitation of cormorants, but today we're focusing on the release of those rehabilitated cormorants. Tim, good morning. Trust you're well, probably in the garden as we talk.
Good morning. I'm sitting on my patio with my beanie and my jacket and a very nice cup of coffee. Thank you kindly, and happy Mother's Day.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to getting treated and indulged after I leave the show.
Yes, well, you should be being treated and indulged now. Why wait? I mean, you've got to maximize every opportunity you have nowadays.
Well, who's to treat me and indulge me? All I have by my side is a cup of coffee. I guess I'll take that for now.
Right. Sort out those producers. This cannot do.
Broderis is smiling here in studio.
I was just thinking as you were doing that, you know, and while you're doing the intro, yeah, I think you've got to be more vigilant now than ever before with this COVID thing. Mm. But, you know, Mother's Day, you can stop and think of the number of species where the mother of that species brings up the cub or the child. Cheetah come to mind, where it's purely mom who brings up the kids. I mean, she has a little relationship for about 3 or 4 days, and then that's that for the next 2.5 to 3 years, and brings up the kids, teaches them everything. So, yeah, even in your own garden, think of how busy birds are. And I must admit, when I listen to little chicks in their nests, I certainly would be doing no breeding, I can assure you, because, boy, they are demanding.
Exceptionally demanding. Well, speaking of little chicks and, of course, birds, we're going to be talking cormorants and an initiative by the Two Oceans Aquarium alongside the Southern African Foundation for the Conservation of Coastal Birds, that's a SANCOB. But, you know, I love the fact that we've established friends of the show, and the Two Oceans Aquarium pops up quite a bit. Looking forward to finding out, Tim, your relationship with SANCOB. Just tell us about whether you've worked at the organization and how long for.
Not really. At SANCOB, I've always popped on air a couple of times, you know, when they've got something really interesting, and that might go back. It goes back beyond the wreck of the treasure, which was the huge wreck with the oil spill that really was important for penguins.
Yeah.
Two Oceans Aquarium, obviously we go back far, far, far times of those, and including the singer Peter Sarstedt, who was involved in a fundraising effort that we did for the Two Oceans Aquarium.
Mm.
So I think it's the sea, it's coming from the coast. It's looking out to sea in the early mornings and seeing the row of black birds that are just above the waves, etc., and the cormorants, the malchus, the various birds that we've seen. And, you know, they are just great. Seabirds are fascinating because they're always so busy. And I think because they're always busy on the coast, they're not in our gardens, we tend not to look at them. We don't know a lot about them. So, yeah, I think, again, also, we had that episode, was it a year before last, where we had all the flamingos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Down in Camphor's Dam. And there was a huge hoo-ha about those flamingos. And then you have a look at this little episode that's going on now, which is kind of run below the radar. And I think it's good to find out what SANCOB do, what is the story behind these cormorants, and yeah, it's just an interesting one.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad we're having this conversation. I've received a few press releases regarding this rehabilitation and release program. So very excited to welcome to a Weekend Breakfast, Dr. Katja Ludinia. Dr. Katja Ludinia, who's a research manager at SANCOB. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
An absolute pleasure. Please do tell us more about, firstly, the cormorant. The cormorant, just describe the bird to us. Describe how you have come to be in the position where you have to rehabilitate these birds, and what are the conditions that under which you find them?
Just to start off, the cormorant, the Cape cormorant, is actually listed as endangered. So it's actually as endangered as the African penguin. A lot of people know the African penguin is endangered. We always go on about that it's the risk of going extinct. The same is actually true for the Cape cormorant. And that is one reason why we are, with the monitoring, with the conservation authorities on the different seaward islands, are monitoring these species. So SANCOP is actually funding rangers that assist Cape Nature, Sandparks, Robben Island Museum with their general seabird work. And our monitor who was on Robben Island in January, he suddenly observed cowcalls flying around very close to a cormorant colony with small chicks in their beaks, so they could be eating little cormorant chicks. And he realized that a lot of the adults had left, which they shouldn't have. The cormorant is not only the mother, it's David, it's also the father who cares for the children. So the adults would have been with the chicks because the chicks were too small to be alone.
Yeah.
So he alerted us and Robben Island Museum Environmental, and we had a long discussion about it, what we should do. It was a very hot day, so we first hoped that the adults had just gone to sea to cool down. They would come out back later. So we observed the situation, and then we realized that the adults were not coming back, and actually more and more adults were leaving, and more chicks were being predated on. We discussed it with the Department of Environment, and we all agreed that these birds should be rescued. So over the next 2 days, we rescued over 1,800 Cape cormorant chicks off Robben Island, and that's where the Two Oceans Aquarium came in big time. Because they were there with their boats, the NSRI as well, so really heads up to those two organizations. They did several shuttle runs to get these birds off the island. They were admitted at SANCOP, and then what followed was about 3 months of intensive rehabilitation to get these birds back to release. And now we're at a state where we're actually releasing these birds back into the wild.
So this is a huge operation that started mid-Jan this year. Any idea or any sense of why the parents or the adult birds were abandoning the young?
No, I mean, we can obviously only speculate, but we do think it is a combination of different changes in our environment that we are seeing, and we are not only seeing them in the Cape cormorant. So we do think it's linked to the lack of fish. So sardines, like Cape cormorant, like Cape gannets, like African penguins, feed predominantly on sardine and anchovy, so what we call the small pelagics. All these three species are listed as endangered, which shows us that it is very much linked to the food availability, and that has been going up and down over the last few years, and more on a downtrend than an uptrend. So that is probably a problem for the birds already, that they're not in the good condition to actually breed successfully. The heat probably played a role. We know that cormorants can work through, they can live through heat more than we had in January, but it does cause them a higher energy expenditure. So they spend more energy on trying to cool themselves down. If they're already struggling to find food, they need to feed their chicks, and now they're struggling with the heat, they might just call it quick.
Sure.
We also know that these birds were kind of the late breeders. So a lot of cormorants had fledged already, so their chicks were already gone by December, January. And these were birds that started late, and they might have started late. We were told by our fisheries colleagues from the department that in November there was actually quite a lot of fish around the west coast. So these birds might have seen the fish around the west coast, thinking, "Oh, great, let's do it," and started breeding.
Sure.
And then they run into trouble in January when the fish has been moved off the west coast.
Interesting. Tim, go ahead.
Robben Island the only breeding area, Cutter, or is it an issue that's sort of far wider reaching than this, but you know, effectively Robben Island is right within your eyesight?
Yeah, so that's definitely the case. So Robben Island is one of the major cormorant colonies. A major one is on Dyer Island around the point. And then we also observed the same incident actually on Dutton Island, just a few hundred kilometers north of Robben Island in Saldanha Bay. So we were actually called to Dutton Island a week later and rescued another 175 birds from Dutton Island, which were actually just the last remaining kind of larger bird that had survived. There was a lot of predation on that island as well. So it was something that was possibly happening all along the west coast. And as you should say, we can intervene where we can see it and where we can reach it. And that's why we try to get our rangers to assist on these islands and to work with the conservation managing authorities to to alarm us to these incidents. So, and we know that it has happened before on other islands. It has happened often just when the birds are on eggs, and then you can't even be fast enough before the health dogs move in. So in a sense, we were lucky that there were chicks that already kind of that we were able to rescue.
In amongst this, is this only the Cape Cormorant? That it's been, or are we also looking at the Bank Cormorant and other of the sort of the knock-on species?
So the Bank Cormorants are also endangered. It's our fourth seaweed species endangered. The Bank Cormorant feeds on other prey. So it feeds mostly on rock lobster, which why it has a huge issue, because the rock lobster population is also very low. Mm. The Bank Cormorant breeds at a slightly different time. It's breeding now in winter. So it wouldn't have been affected at that point, but we are very, very worried about the Bank Cormorant.
Hmm. When you take the birds back now, Katja, what is your sort of release point? Are these now grown to the point that they can fly? Are they still, or is it still in a fledging state? And you basically just got to hope that they can get enough food.
No, so we have them at Sangal. That's why it also took so long to get them absolutely ready for release. So they are able to fly. They get tested for waterproofing, so they get forced to swim for quite a long time, and then their waterproofing gets tested. They undergo intensive veterinary testing, blood analysis, all these things to make sure they don't carry any parasites, any sicknesses, any diseases. The one problem which makes rehabilitating cormorants so difficult is that in the wild they actually have what we call post-catch and fledgling care. So even though the birds can fly, they can basically forage for themselves, the parents will still assist them once in a while with some food. So you would see them fly off and then they return and then they stand around and then their parents come and still give them an odd fish or two. And that is obviously difficult for us to do. So what we're trying, which is actually a first time for us to trial this method now on Robben Island, is that we do kind of a soft release. We have an enclosure that was built particularly for this event, where we keep the bird for 2 days so they can kind of acclimatize to the area. They still get fed. They see the wild bird. We release them very closely to the wild bird that are roosting on Robben Island. So they hear the calls, everything. And then when we open the gate, they're basically free to go. So some of them go straight and join the wild group. Others actually stick around, and we do provide them food. So if they feel like they need a little bit of a booster, they can come back and still feed on some fish.
I've got my mental cartoon here of 1,800 cormorants tripping back from the island back to the shore, banging on your door and saying, "Listen, Governor, we're hungry. There's not enough food." It must be a large concern, though, which is, I think, sort of like one of my final thoughts, is when you mention that word disease, because it is so easy if something goes wrong, for example, unfortunately, at Sankob, and you then take 1,800 birds back and put them into a colony, that would be catastrophic. How do you get around that?
Yes, so we do a lot of testing on our birds. So we have a disease surveillance program at Sankop, where we test all our birds at the center, but we also get carcasses in from the wild, from the different colonies, and test those for diseases regularly. So we basically have a very good idea what is currently around. And also, because we only deal with local birds, basically the diseases that would pop out of Sankop are most likely already in the wild. But we obviously do not want to release a bird that is carrying that disease and could spread it. But that is actually one reason why we're very hesitant to release other species like rockhoppers or penguins. I know king penguins, I know there's always in the media, what do you do with these birds when they rock up on the shore? Because there the risk is that they could take a disease back into an area that is basically pristine in the Southern Ocean. But so most likely birds that would have be carriers of something, they would have been carrier of this in the wild already. But we do a lot of testing, and we work very closely with the state veterinary services on this.
Katja, the duration of this release program, you've alluded to the fact that what you've done is essentially made sure that you'll be able to be on site and at least feed the released birds for about 2 days. But the duration of the program, what does it look like, and when do you know that you finally succeeded, or at some point do you have to put a hard stop to your interventions with the birds?
Yeah, so we still have over 200 birds that need to be released. So those will hopefully go in the next few days. And then we will probably have to continue feeding them for about a month after the last birds have been released. That is kind of the time frame that the adults would still feed them. But we do mark all our birds that are released. So they all have a metal band, a metal ring around their leg that has an individual number. And then a lot of them also have a color band, so a plastic color ring around the other leg that actually has one letter and one number. And they can relatively easily be spotted if you see a cormorant on the beach or with binoculars or spotting scopes. So we are getting information back. We've had birds that were seen as far north as Santa Helena Bay and as far east of Cape Agulhas. So they are traveling along the coast, which is great because that shows that they are going into the wild population and they move with the wild birds.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we do get quite a lot of reports of dead birds that are found again, which obviously we then, in a while, once we have enough data, we need to assess, is it a higher mortality of the birds that we handle than the normal juvenile mortality? We know that in seabirds, juvenile mortality is a huge issue. So even of the birds that are reared by their parents, there will be thousands that die every year in the first year. So it will be a long-term process to basically survey that. So hopefully in a year or so, we can start looking at, you know, how successful actually was it. And that's also one reason we do this. It is obviously a learning curve, and we obviously want to be prepared for the next one, and we want to be better prepared for the next one. So anything we learn now is obviously will be very valuable for the next rescues, and we're pretty sure there will come with just the situation our environment is in and the climate and everything. It is a learning curve for all of us.
Absolutely. Well, all the best with the remaining 200, and congratulations on, you know, having done this successfully thus far. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you for having us.
That's Dr. Kata Ludinia, who's a research manager at ZANCOB. Tim, always fascinating conversations that you bring us when we talk conservation on Weekend Breakfast. Thanks so much.
Yeah, pleasure. I think it's one of those things that you always get concerned about is, you know, you save the birds, but how does one create the food? So that's a challenge. And next week we're going to be with Don Pinnock and looking at the Creasy Decree and seeing how successful could the canned lion hunting industry changes. How successful could those be?
Sure. Okay. So my homework then is to read up on bills, and more legislation. Looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, we'll keep it nice and simple. Let's go and have a good time. But have a wonderful Mother's Day.
I will do. Tim, you have fun today too. Spoiling that important lady and woman in your life. It's Tim Neary. We're talking CSI and nature conservation.